Welcome to Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, December 14th, 2015. And with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. And I hope you're doing well.
Doing great, man. Thanks for having us.
It's awesome to have you here. The other part of us would be Dave Hamilton. I'm really glad you're here, too. How's it going?
I'm glad to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome. And also awesome, we have a new sponsor this week, and our sponsor is Mac Fun and their Aurora HDR product, which is pretty cool. I'll be talking about that soon. But before we get to that, I wanted to jump back to Friday, because Dave, you wrote a really interesting piece about your experience moving from an iPad mini 2 to an iPad mini 4 and then back again, and what that told you.
Yeah, there and back again. I'm definitely sold on the mini form factor, right? It works very well for me. I actually don't mind the Air form factor, but the mini is even better for me. Last year I chose not to upgrade to the mini 3 simply because they're other than Apple adding Touch ID to the line, there was no change. The hardware was the same, the CPU was the same, the RAM was the same, the screen was the same. There was no difference. And the way I use my iPad Touch ID, I didn't think would matter. Certainly not enough to justify going out and purchasing a new one. But when the iPad Mini 4 was announced, and I use the term announced very loosely, I think it got all of about a half a second's worth of mention in Apple's, I believe it was their September 9th event, if I'm
yeah,
if
it was like
serves.
An oh by the yeah. way thing.
Yeah, it was like, oh yeah, by the way, the iPad Mini 4 now has the same guts as the iPad Air 2.
It was the anti just one more thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, that really caught my eye. I was like, wait a minute, that holy cow, that's what we want. So they sent me one to test for kind of a long-term test, and I moved to it and certainly initially appreciated the Touch ID. It is convenient, especially with apps that use it. Less so for me for just unlocking the device, because I don't care about that with my iPad. I kind of leave my iPad unlocked all the time. It's not like my phone, but because it's just mostly around the house and it's not a big deal. But with apps and stuff, being able to like unlock one password and that sort of thing, it's handy. But the speed was noticeable initially. Apps launched faster. You know, certain apps like the Chrome, especially, which I use for some things, is woefully CPU dependent on iOS. It's actually horribly written. I guess it's probably that way on the Mac too. But you know, that was faster. So I was like, oh, good. You know, here's these things. And then I went back. And I thought, you know, I wasn't convinced that I needed the 4. So I thought, well, let me go back to the 2 for a little while. And man, the speed, and more so than the speed even, is the RAM. The Mini 4 has double the RAM that the Mini 2 and Mini 3 had. And that makes a huge difference for a number of reasons. Apps don't have to relaunch as often, right? So when you're bouncing from app to app, more RAM means it didn't have to jettison that app and then now relaunch it when you rerun the app. And that then allows for true split screen mode and all of that. And I think that's one of the reasons we don't get split screen mode on like the Mini 2 or the Mini 3. It just doesn't have enough RAM to reliably run multiple apps simultaneously. And so that really pays off in those ways. And then, of course, it is just simply faster. And that makes a big difference, too. The screen is the same. The form factor, unfortunately, is actually a little bit different. So, but only slightly, but enough so that you cannot use your old cases on this. You have to buy cases for the Mini 4, but that, you know, that's not that big of a deal. So but yeah, it was a noticeable change when I migrated back, and it made me realize just how worthy an upgrade the Mini 4 really is. So if you've got a 2 or a 3, and certainly a Mini 1, that, you know, the Mini 4 is put that on your Christmas list.
Can I play not necessarily Debbie Downer, but more like maybe Whiny Wiener?
Yes, Brian, please.
You know, we're all excited. I'm still exceedingly cranky that the iPad Air was not updated this year. I don't get it.
The Air 2 just persisted.
The iPad Air product line wasn't updated. We're still at the iPad Air 2, which has the same innards that you're so excited about on the Mini. Yep. And, you know, I'm thinking, how about it's better than the year-old Air 2? It just seems like Apple is
super slow
with this.
Yeah, I believe that's intentional. Or at least
so do I.
A choice that they have made, you know. And I think it's that people don't upgrade their iPads all that often, right? It's not like your phone where you're getting a new one every year. It's more like a computer. And let's be honest, you know, we're all at various stages in our homes and such, running computers that are anywhere between, you know, 2 weeks and, I'm doing my math here, almost 9 years old, right? And those machines those 9 year old machines are still perfectly functional.
Yeah, but you're not going to go and pay full price for the 9 year old machine. And you're not going to go pay full price for the 1 year old machine. Unless it's a Mac Pro.
Yeah.
In which case, you're paying full price for a 2.5 year old design.
That's right. That's right. But the thing is it's, you know, here it is. And here's the device. And it works and it does everything that it's built to do. I guess my question is, what would you have them do to it?
Well, there are new processors out. There was new technology that was unveiled for the iPhone and for two disparate sets of new technologies that was rolled out for iPad Pro and iPhone 6S. How about we take some of those things and put them in an iPad Air 3?
Yeah, they will next year.
Oh yeah, great, wonderful.
Yeah, so Brian, you have to wait till next year to get your new iPad.
I think it's a 2 year upgrade cycle from Apple with iPads. And
It's weird and lame.
Is it? I mean, how often does the MacBook Pro get upgraded
from Apple? Still once a year.
Yeah, incrementally, but a significant upgrade, it's every 2 years.
The incremental upgrade is fine. Apple has been doing incremental upgrades now for a long time across all of its product lines. It's one of the things that Steve Jobs grew up about, according to Becoming. Mm. By the time he got back to Apple, was accepting the fact that not everything has to be, a home run.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, but that's the thing is, you can put new stuff in it for the sake of putting new stuff in it, but I don't think that's what Apple's doing with those incremental upgrades on the MacBook Pros. They're putting things in that are going to matter, and I'm just not convinced that it matters. I mean, I was fine with my 2 year old, iPad Mini until I used something faster, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, I get it. But I don't know how much faster I need than that.
You know, I'm still using an iPad Mini 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you feel about that machine?
It's sluggish now.
Okay. Yeah, that I believe.
Noticeably so. Yeah. But I haven't upgraded it yet because I just bought an iPad Pro, and it just didn't seem appropriate for me to shell out the money for a fourth-gen iPad Mini right after getting an iPad Pro. I need to figure out how these devices fit, because what if an iPad Mini isn't right for me anymore? What if I need a new iPad Air? And I have the iPad Air 1, and I don't know. My inclination is that maybe what I should do the next time I get a new iPad is skip the iPad Air, replace the iPad Mini, and then work with a really big iPad and a really tiny iPad.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, we'll see. It's not like I'm on a deadline to decide when I replace an iPad again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Brian, I totally get why you're frustrated, because the iPad that hits the sweet spot for you is the iPad Air. And that's the one that didn't get any love in 2015.
Which era are you running, Brian?
The original. And I was going to wait, Dave. I don't know if you realize this, but I was planning on waiting for an Air 2. I had an iPad 3.
Right.
And I dropped my iPad 3 and shattered the glass.
Got it.
So I ended up having to update to the Air about 5 months, I think, before the Air 2 came out, knowing, this year I would have said it was coming out too, but whatever. And I think it's
engineering resources, right? They don't want to put – in order to update – they built the iPad Pro this year, right? I mean, they rolled it out. I mean, I think it's been in production or in the design phase in R&D for far more than a year.
Yeah,
but this year the iPad team focused on that. And whatever they needed to do to the iPad Mini to make it the iPad Mini 4, because there are some changes to that.
Form factor. Hire some more folks. This run and lean and mean thing is fantastic until you become such an incredibly large corporation that you're running so lean you can't actually do all the things you need to do.
Yeah, I think there's more to running lean. I think where the difference is, and I would actually argue this point with you. Apple doesn't – it would not be good to go back to the Performa days when Apple's –
I'm not asking that, Dave. I'm asking for
– But you are.
I'm asking for a new iPad 3. I'm not asking for there to be 16 different versions of the iPad Air.
Yeah, but why do that and steal the thunder from the iPad Pro?
Exactly.
Well, and they released the iPad 2 – the iPad Mini 4 –
Yeah, that's not going to steal any thunder. No, because of its size.
And they didn't even bother to tell you, pretty much. There was a slide.
Yeah, well, they could have done the same thing with the Air 3.
Yeah, but people would have. The Mini is for, Jeff, I think you're the anomaly. There are few people that would use, in my opinion, a Mini and an iPad Pro. I think it's
a perk. That's a whiny perk of the job.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Dave. I'm an anomaly.
Yeah, but if you update the iPad, if you rolled out an iPad Air 3, which would have to have capabilities similar to the iPad Pro in order for it to be an upgrade over the Air 2, right? I mean,
actually could have done the things that are the difference between the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6S. You could have done those things. The processor, Force Touch, you don't even have to support the pencil or anything like that, but the faster Touch ID, better camera. The differences between the 6 and the 6S on the iPhone would have made for a solid incremental upgrade on the Air 2 to the Air 3.
Yes, it would. And engineering, I think it would have distracted from the iPad Pro.
I'm shocked you guys have become such massive apologists.
Oh, I'm not apologizing.
Force Touch, getting that right on a larger screen, better to focus on one. I mean, just like when they rolled out Touch ID, right? They rolled out new iPads and everything at that point in time. And I remember asking at the event, asking Apple PR, hey, these new iPads, the Retina iPads, minis, they have Force Touch? No. Why? Well, we like it on the phone. That's where we're going to look at it for now.
Okay, but there was still a new device announced that year. Well, you're actually just making my case. So you don't do everything that's in the iPhone 6, but you could do the new processor. You could do the faster Touch ID. Do the better camera, so fine, you leave the Force Touch out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see how you draw that line, right? Where does that list, and at what point do people start complaining, right? Well, look at this, they crippled it so that it...
Well, you just gave me an example where they did exactly this. This is what they did last year.
Yeah.
So why not do it again?
Because everybody complained about it.
We weren't complaining about the iPad Air 2, though. Actually, this would have been 2 years ago.
Yeah, why doesn't it have Touch ID? Well, that's new for this device and only that device. They like to figure things out. It doesn't surprise me at all. I know you're whining just because you want it.
I know. Yeah, totally.
I mean, that's, but I think, and I think that's either intentionally or otherwise skewing your judgment on it.
Possibly.
Yeah.
It bothers me paying full price for the computing world, Apple included, has trained us to expect bigger, better, faster, stronger.
Yeah.
Right, and it bothers me paying full price for your old technology.
Well, don't.
I won't.
And they don't expect you to.
And then you'll be able to do it in 2016.
That's right.
Yeah. So they're doing you a favor, Brian. They're letting you save up a little longer before you have to buy your new iPad.
Mm-hmm.
That's clearly what mm-hmm. this is all about.
And I'll close with.
Yeah. Well, there you go. All right. Hey, we have a sponsor this week who is not crying, and that sponsor is Aurora HDR from Mac Fun. And if this sounds like I'm just tossing out weird acronyms, well, I kind of am. But HDR is the thing that you've probably already seen on your iPhone where you can take a photograph where you get the best contrast between all the different elements. So like if you're taking an outdoor shot, you don't have the sky blown out. And you don't have to worry about the what's on the ground being way too dark. HDR figures all of that out and puts together multiple exposures to give you the image where you get the good-looking sky and the good-looking ground area too. Well, so what you can do with Aurora HDR is handle that whole HDR thing like really effectively on your Mac. And doing it in a way where you get a much better tonal range across an image than you can just with the HDR that's in your iPhone camera. Although that's still pretty good, but this is better, and it lets you work with multiple images as opposed to just bracketing like a shot above and a shot below for your exposures. And so what the people at MacFun are doing with Aurora HDR is they've put together this whole package where you get the software for your Mac, and it's like crazy easy to use. And then you also get a month of training to go along with that from Arcanum. And you get a bonus pack full of photo textures that you can use. And they teamed up with Trey Ratcliffe, who is like one of the world's top HDR photographers. And he's put together an ebook with them so that you can learn how to take better HDR images. And so they put together this whole deal for us, and it's like a $200 package, but we can all pick it up for $99.99. So what you need to do is head over to their website, and that will be Aurora HDR. So that's AuroraHDR.com/TDO. And when you go there, you're going to be able to get that pretty much a half price deal for this really great HDR plugin set up for your Mac and all this extra training and Trey Ratcliffe's ebook. And you can do this through the end of the year. So the deal's good through December 31st. So don't procrastinate, because then you'll be sorry because you missed out. So thank you, Aurora HDR and Mac Fun, for being our sponsor this week. All right. So before we wrap up today, we were having an interesting discussion before the meeting or before the call, where it turns out that maybe doing some crowdsourcing with our listeners might pay off. So Dave, what we're doing is actually kind of pulling a little bit of a Mac Geek Gab here.
Yeah.
And
a geek challenge, if you will.
A geek challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. So my issue is this. I have a friend who is not overly technically savvy. He's not terrible, but I don't want to put him through. He's doing me a favor by sending me several very, very large files. They're music files. They're song files that I would love to have from a band that he played in. He has all the rights in the world to send me these songs because he wrote most of them. he was going to send them to me via his Dropbox, but he doesn't have enough space in his Dropbox to store the files, and therefore he can't share them with me. And that's how Dropbox works. It doesn't matter if I have the space. If he doesn't, then it doesn't matter. We both need to have the space, which is sort of weird because if one of us is paying for the space, then the other should be able to use it. But that's not how Dropbox works. So my question was, how is this person, how is anyone supposed to able to send me large files? I have a transporter which has gobs of storage on it. I have a Synology disk station which has gobs of storage on it. And I can share things from it fairly easily. But there's no inbound way of saying, hey, here's this link, go to this link, upload your files, and then we're done. So that's my question, is how would you have people do this? We've talked about MailDrop, and I'm not sure if he's a Mac user, so I need to find that out. And if he is, I think he might be, and also an iCloud user, right, because that's how that would work, then yes, that would be one option. So, but otherwise, what are the ways that people can do this? You know, Hightail is what YouSendIt grew into. It's a little, he needs to go create an account to do that. I would like to do the hard work and give him a link and say, send it to me this way, and it just works. That's the goal here, is put the burden on the recipient as opposed to the sender. How does that work?
That would be a wonderful thing.
I think so, yeah. And I just can't imagine that off the top of my head, I don't already know how to do this. It's not, it should be easier than this.
Well, if the three of us were not able to come up with an easy solution quickly, that tells me it's probably not there.
My question is this Jan Hammer and like all the Miami Vice B-sides that he's been hiding?
No, I already have all those from Jan.
Okay.
Believe it or not. Yeah. Yeah. Jan's actually really technically literate. I already have all that stuff.
And plus, I also know that you would know whether or not he was a Mac user. So
I
knew the answer when I was asking my question there. But
Not only is Jan a Mac user, but I have seen the Mac 2 upon which all those Miami Vice songs were created. And the sad part is, when I last saw that machine was about 10 years ago, it was sitting on the floor of his manager's office, like in it was like, you know, his floor is kind of like where the Ark of the Covenant is stored. It's just like a bunch of boxes and old junk. This isn't even at Jan's house. This is just at his manager's office. And with a tiny little lock on the door, you know. But the Mac 2 was just sitting there on the floor. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, you might be interested to know that that's the machine. I'm like, have you pulled the files off of that? You understand what's there? Like, this is crazy. So we did. We pulled the files off.
Should be in the Smithsonian.
Yeah, this machine sort of matters, or at least the data on it matters.
Or at least in your living room.
Yeah, well, you know, it would be the same here as I would, you know, it would be stored.
Well, the important thing is that the files have been pulled off of there.
Yeah. They're all taken care of. That's right. But no, it's not Jan. It's a friend of mine, Matt, that played in a band that actually did fairly well on the college circuit called Those Melvins, that then changed their name to Big Train. So
cool.
Yeah.
All right. So listeners, you're part of the Brain Trust. Let us know what your ideas are. You can hit me up on Twitter. That would be TMO Daily. You can shoot us an email. That would be observations@macobserver.com. And you can leave comments in today's show notes as well. So let us know what you think. What's an easy way for Dave to be able to get his somewhat non-technical friend to send files easily through the internet? All right. And with that, we are out of time. But I'm going to take just a second and let people know I have a podcast class coming up on January 12th. So if you're anywhere around Boulder, Colorado, I'm teaching the class through Boulder Digital Arts. I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes so that you can check it out. It's an evening long class, and I will fill your head with all kinds of information about how to start up your own podcast. And I have a discount code for 15% off. So, Members at Boulder Digital Arts, the classes are $69. Non-members are $89. 15% off either one of those. I'll make sure that all that's in today's show notes for you. Dave, thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's always awesome. Brian, it's always awesome to have you here too, so thank you.
Thank you.
And Mac Fun, thank you for being our sponsor today. Head over to aurorahdr.com/TDO and get Aurora HDR and all that awesome training for $99.99 instead of $200. And listeners, thank you for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.